you're about to hear. But the angel, Matthew chapter 28, verse 5, the angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid." They're presented with this angel of the Lord in brilliant shining and power. And of course their first reaction is one of awe at their smallness before this magnificence. But they're told, "Don't be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified." First beautiful statement. He is not here. You don't look for someone you hold. He's not here. Still true. We're going to see that qualified beautifully in a moment. But basically, he is not here any more than my father is here or my mother. They've died. They're not here. One. Two. He has been raised. I'll come back to that in a moment with you. As he said, raised by God, come see the place where he lay. Then go quickly, so they don't see the risen Christ. They see the place where he lay and they see that he's not here. They're asked to believe that he has been raised. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has been raised from the dead. Indeed, and here's the third point, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. You won't see him here, you won't see him in the empty tomb, but you will see him, and I'll have to come back on that with you too in a moment, there in Galilee. You might remember at the Last Supper, Jesus made that promise. You'll all be scattered, but I will go ahead of you into Galilee and you will see me there. This is my message for you, says the angel of the Lord. So it's a revelation. It's an experience of the divine, which is always a faith experience beyond our empirical observation and so on. It impinges on our world, but in a mysterious way. That can't be just written down and formalized. It's always mysterious and always requires faith. But you will see. He's not here. He has been raised. You will see him. So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy. And they ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. This is only in Matthew's account of the empty tomb. You don't find in Luke or John or Mark. Suddenly Jesus met them and he said, "Hail, greetings." They came to him, took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid." The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid." Jesus says, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee." Indeed, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. There they will see me. So in Matthew's Gospel, the experience of the empty tomb, that's an empirical experience. It asks a question. It raises a problem. It demands some kind of explanation. It is revealed to them there, to their faith, something that we're calling the resurrection, and a promise that they will know that and see it for themselves in Galilee. And in Matthew's Gospel, that revelation of God is a Jesus revelation. He is present in the very revelation itself. They don't see him there. They experience him there. And it's Jesus speaking to them, just as he speaks to you and to me. Jesus speaking to them and saying, yes, the revelation you have experienced is from me. Do it. Don't be afraid. Tell my brothers that they will see me there. So we have to do a little bit of theology now. And I've handed you out some paper to do this more thoroughly with you. And I want to look with you carefully. What does it mean he has been raised? And then what does it mean you will see him? Because the meaning has to be looked at, I think, with some care. Well, I'll move through this fairly swiftly because you can take it away and ponder it for yourself. But I want to give you all the information. Firstly, let's look at he has been raised. The Greek, for those who want Greek, is egeiro, but that won't worry you particularly. And these are the ways Matthew has used it already in his gospel, quite frequently. What it means, firstly, its basic meaning is to awake from sleep. That's what egeiro means. Keep that before your mind when you hear raised. It means wakened from sleep. That's why, incidentally, Christians invented the word, and they did invent it, cemetery. A cemetery means a place of sleeping. Because Christians realize that physical death is not death. It's not dying. It's not separation from life or from God. So awaking from sleep is what it means, basically. We used it in the early chapter. When Joseph awoke from sleep, he did as the angel commanded him. The word for awake there is egeiro. Same word. And they went and woke up Jesus when he was in the boat. They used the word egeiro. They didn't raise him from the dead. They just woke him up. That's its meaning. It is used often enough in the gospel for to get up. Even if you're not asleep, you're in a position of repose, either lying down or sitting down still, and you get moving or you get someone else moving. Not necessarily now from sleep, but from a position of being still. Very often, well, we've got 10 there, have we, from Matthew. Joseph is told to get up, take the child and flee to Egypt. Again, same word. Peter's mother-in-law got up and began to serve them. Jesus got up and rebuked the winds. Jesus told the paralyzed man to stand up. And that's egeiro. Same word. Get up. Get moving. Jesus got up and followed the leader to the synagogue. Jesus touched them and said, get up and don't be afraid. The bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. Jesus told the apostles, get up, see my betrayer is at hand. I'm stressing that for you to see that it's a very simple word in Greek. To wake up, and even if you're not asleep, to kind of get moving. Thirdly, it's used for to rise up or to cause something else to rise up. I'll give you these examples from Matthew. God is able from these stones to raise up children. Jesus says of John the Baptist, among those born of women, no one has arisen. Very metaphorical use of the word. Will you not lay hold of the sheep and lift it out of a pit? To lift up, lift out is to egeiro, to raise. Nation will rise against nation, prophets will arise and lead many astray. And finally, it's used quite a number of times in the gospel for to rise up from death. And that's the way it's being used here. As though death is a kind of sleep, and you are awakened from sleep and brought back into conscious life. It's a simple word, keep it simple. God comes to Jesus, who is sleeping in the tomb, and wakes him up and says, g'day, come into life. On the first day of the week, the new creation day, when God said, let there be light, now he says again, let there be. and a new Adam arises, a new life begins, a new covenant starts, a new creation, which goes on and on and on and still with us. And that's why we celebrate Sunday, of course, because it's the beginning of a new creation each week. Please God. Well, Jesus took the girl by the hand. You remember the little girl, Jairus, who was dead? And she got up. She wakened out of that sleep into life. The apostles were told to go forth and raise the dead. And there's no intention, surely, of them going around cemeteries to raise them. They had to raise them from here, from wherever we are, dead, like separated from God, dead. Well, they had to raise them to life by forgiving sin, by welcoming them into community, all the ways we are raised back to union with God, which equals life. The Queen of the South will rise up at the judgment. John the Baptist has been raised from the dead. Each time Jesus promised on the third day he would be raised, and so on. So when it says he's not here, he's been raised, the simple word is saying God awakened Jesus from the sleep of what we call death and raised him to himself, raised him to life. On the reverse side, you will see him. Now the word to see, I've given you the Greek word there, horao, which actually is our word, by the way, and it's a good word, aware, A-W-A-R-E in English, comes from the same root as horao in Greek. A very good translation for see is be aware of. Well, usually, the word see in Greek, as in English, means to see with your eyes. That's the basic idea. Just as you see me now, if you look this way, and I can see you. And we do the same in English. That's what we mean by see. However, as in English, we have a lot of ways of seeing. Do you see what I mean? You don't see with your eyes what I mean, do you? You see with your intelligence. So see, from that idea of light and awareness with the ocular vision, obviously, readily takes on a whole layer after layer of meaning, of different levels of awareness. You can see with your heart. Blind people can see things you'll never see and I'll never see because of their sensitivity. They feel, they're aware, but they see. In a real sense, see, but not in a physical, ocular sense. So here's how the word has been used in Matthew. He's the one saying here, you will see me. And I'm stressing this lest you think that to see the risen Christ, you necessarily have to have, like the question would be, would a blind disciple have missed anything at the resurrection? That's a simple question. I don't expect you to answer it with absolute clarity, but I can't believe that a blind disciple would have missed anything. Well, Jesus, do you have to have vision to see the risen Christ so that all the blind people missed out? Not the Jesus I know. So you will see him in Galilee. What might it mean? Well, the word see is used in Matthew for experience. Here's an example, 16:28. There are some standing here, said Jesus, who will not taste death. The word for taste is horao, see, not see death, not experience death. Taste, how do you put it into English? They're all good. Before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. But you don't see your own death. Well, actually, you might. Some of these people have had near-death experiences, but I won't get into that. So you won't experience death. The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. Chapter 4, verse 16. That's not literal. Sitting in darkness can happen, can't it, in the middle of a room with blazing light. In fact, the more light, the darker you feel, don't you think, sometimes? And you're in a crowd, you never feel more lonely than in a crowd if you're lonely. So the darkness is existential dark, and the seeing of the great light is something more beautiful and more profound and more mysterious than what might happen when your ocular nerve responds to the whatever comes through the air to stimulate the nerve end. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. They will experience, be aware of. Okay. The word horao is used by Matthew to mean to see to something. For example, all those quotations, I won't give them all to you, but see that you say nothing to anyone. We use that in English, don't we? See that you get here on time. Well, you can do that with your eyes closed. See that you do it, like attend to it. Be alert. Don't be kind of living in a Pollyanna world where everything's lovely. It's not all lovely. Have a look at it. So see that no one knows of this. Watch out. Beware of the yeast of the Sadducees and so on. Examples of this word see, meaning be attentive with the whole of your being. There are examples in Matthew of seeing with the eyes of the mind, with the enlightened mind. Chapter 2, Herod saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men. Jesus, perceiving their thoughts, he didn't do that with his eyes. You will indeed listen and never understand. You'll look, another verb, but you won't perceive. In other words, you'll see, but you won't see. Your eyes functioning wonderfully, but the rest of you is as dead as a doornail. You're not at all alert to what your eyes are picking up. Jesus wants us to see, to perceive, to be aware, to be alert. And you will see me in Galilee. And here finally, and I will read these, to see with one's spirit, to see in faith. And in all the resurrection accounts, the only ones that see are those who believe. Jesus, the baptism, saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. How did he see that? Blessed are the pure in heart, says Matthew, or Jesus in Matthew. They will see God. Pure in heart will see God. With their eye? Jesus saw their faith. Suddenly there appeared to them, the word appear is the passive of the same verb, Moses and Elijah. They were seen by them. How would you see Moses and Elijah? With your eyes? And look at this beautiful passage. Lord, this kind of clinches it in a way. This is the last judgment. Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food? When did we see you thirsty and give you something to drink? When was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? When was it that we saw you and visited you? When did we see you in Galilee? And the answer there is, whenever you did it to any of the least of my brothers, you did it to me. Who they actually saw with their eyes was Paul of Tarsus, or Ananias, or you, or me, or the gardener, or a stranger walking, or person in need, or that's who we see. But if our eyes are enlightened, our heart is enlightened, if our faith is engaged, we can actually see the risen Christ in Galilee or Henley Beach or wherever we are. See, really see, with our whole being, but with a perception that is born of enlightened faith. None of that clinches anything. It's too mysterious for me to pretend to understand it all, but I do want you to read those words with some care, or you might automatically assume that the people of the New Testament actually saw Jesus with their eyes, meaning, if you're not careful, that Jesus kind of walked into the room with a different suit on, but actually looking much the same, but a bit fresh, with good knees and good hips and kind of, you know, really fit. Not like he was on the cross, but you could see it was certainly Jesus. And if that's what you think they saw, keep reading all the New Testament accounts, and they become very mysterious for such a scene, don't they? Because they never recognize him that way. Surely they're telling us something much more powerful than that. And it doesn't answer the question what the risen body looks like. Because if they saw the risen body and Jesus looked 5'8" or whatever he was, they weren't as tall those days as a lot of us are these days, so 5'6" or 5'8" and certain this and well, then when Paul was asked in the letter to the Corinthians, what's the risen body like? He would have said, well, look, we've got Jesus, and, you know, it's much the same. I mean, you've got slightly lighter skin or more hair or less hair or I don't know. He could have described the risen body, but he doesn't. He said, it's a foolish question. What's the risen body like? He said, how the heck do I know? He says, there are all kinds of bodies in this world. There are heavenly bodies. He talks about the stars. There are earthly bodies. There's the seed and the tree. He doesn't say there's the caterpillar and the butterfly, but had he thought of it, he would have. I'd like to improve on Paul a bit. And you can imagine all these little caterpillars arguing about what a risen caterpillar looks like. And they're watching butterflies, although they're having an argument. They don't even know they're related. Having a discussion with butterflies, what do you think a risen caterpillar would look like? And the butterfly says, I don't know. Never seen anything as ugly as you in my life. So the risen body, body means person. What's being promised here is that if you go, we'll come to it, if you go ahead into Galilee, go back to where Jesus met you. Go back to the times when you were touched and called and those real human experiences that you had. Go back to them and you'll find me there. You will experience me there. You'll be aware of me there. It's not make-believe, it's not wishful thinking, it's going to be a powerful experience that is life-transforming and much more valid. The eye can deceive, the faithful heart can't. They will experience the risen Christ in Galilee.